Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome, everybody, back to Onceable, a podcast brought to you from the folks at Hypeable.com. Today, we're going to be covering Once Upon a Time in Wonderland because there isn't a new episode of the regular Once Upon a Time in order to cover this week. So we're covering, I guess, what we could call the spinoff show. So I am Laura, and today I'm being joined by both Karen and Kristen. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
So before we get into today's episode, just to give you a brief recap, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do it by leaving a comment over on any of our posts about Once Upon a Time at hypable.com. That's hypable.com. Over on the podcast section or on any of our news sections. You can also send us a tweet at Once Upon News. The episode today is called Who's Alice? We get to see more of kind of Alice's very sad background with what her life was like with her family and, you know, what she had kind of, you know, it's all about sort of loss and missing things and what does it mean to, you know, not have something you want very, very badly and what's the cost of that. So it's really a really kind of interesting episode. I think we can safely say that Once Upon a Time in Wonderland is continuing down its kind of dark road, although it is not nearly as dark and creepy as it was last week. Before we get into perhaps the darkness and creepiness of it all, let's talk about what maybe are some of our favorite moments, favorite quotes. Maybe they're not nearly as dark and creepy. So, Kristen, how about you? Did you have a favorite quote this episode?
I have to say, I love when Alice is like approaching the Black Forest and she's looking and reading all the signs and she says, "It seems like an awful waste of wood when one sign would do." Because you always think that, like in Wizard of Oz, when they have like 10 signs walking up to the forest and you're like, seriously? Like, that seems like overkill.
It's so funny you said that because like, I totally thought that when she said that too. That was like the first thing that leapt into my mind. Karen, how about you? What's your favorite?
Mine came from the knave, of course. And actually, I liked the whole scene pretty much between him and Alice when they were in that forest place where she couldn't really remember who she was. He had a couple of really funny lines and a couple of really heartfelt lines, and I liked all of them. But the funniest one was probably when he pops out and like the dust or whatever goes into his face and he goes, "What the hell? It's a bloody perfume bottle." And I just started cracking up.
Oh, the knave.
Oh, we can't possibly have too much knave. I have to say, I'm going to be very upset when this ends if we don't get the knave back in Once Upon a Time somehow. I think he's just too good of a character to just have a one-off series with. I really hope they bring him into the other world full-time. My favorite, I think, was Jafar. It's kind of a combo, but one of it is when he has the bag on the desk of the doctor and he opens it up and the rabbit comes out and he says, "Sometimes the maddest stories are the truest ones." It's so true. Even in life, sometimes you're like, nobody's ever going to believe this, but it's, you know, the truth is often just completely fantastic some of the time. The other thing that I thought was really funny is when he comes in and, you know, he's trying to get the doctor to tell him about Alice and the doctor's denying that she's there. And he's saying, "Oh, you have so many girls here. We have so many patients. I couldn't remember." And he's saying, "But of course you do. Of course you remember Alice. How many of them escape in the company of a talking rabbit?" So I thought that was a really fun one. And interesting to see Jafar now walking around London. At least the bad Jerry. At least the bad Jerry curl was gone. I was like,
oh,
so happy.
Yes.
Like, we finally established what Jafar's hairstyle should be.
He's quite the smooth talker too. I mean, in Wonderland he's pretty intimidating, but here it's interesting to see him change a little bit and know that he can't really pull off the same things that he does in Wonderland.
Obviously got his suit and hat, but not by
right
means. But yeah, you know, it's not like, you know, say Once Upon a Time where Regina is like throwing fireballs every 30 seconds in I mean, she's like a pyromaniac and want to time these things. And it's not like Jafar's, you know, whipped out the snake cane and is having the little snake eyes zap things all over the place. When we start off talking about Alice's return to England, what did you guys think of that? Were you surprised that that was where we were at this time?
Not really. I mean, I did sort of expect them to explore that because it is sort of such a huge part of her story. Plus, when we first meet Alice, she's in the insane asylum, and I figured, you know, eventually we would get a little bit more backstory on her father and the things that happened between them. I thought it was really interesting how far they went into it. I mean, they built this whole episode around that, so it was kind of cool to see that, although I don't think I really cared about that backstory as much as they probably would have liked us to, just because I kind of knew what was going to happen. We knew that her father was going to, you know, send her away, although it was her choice. And we knew that they weren't as close as they once were. So I guess I was just kind of waiting for, you know, the other foot to drop. And it did, just like I expected it to.
I sort of feel the same as you, Karen, that it didn't have for me, I think, the intrinsic emotional pull the writers wanted it to have. And I think almost that is true for this entire series. Like, I don't think that I care oftentimes as much as they want me to care about certain things. And I think it's just that we haven't had, I don't know, maybe that build or that attachment to some of these people because we don't get enough backstory. I mean, I know there's only so much time in an hour show, but I agree with you. I had, I had a hard time feeling the connections there. How about you, Kristen?
I know when I watched the trailer after last week's episode that I was a little confused as to who was in what time period. Like, I wasn't sure if we were seeing current Alice back then because she didn't look any different. And so I know that going into this episode, I wasn't really sure what we were getting into. But as soon as I saw that it was like a flashback and we were seeing her backstory, it made sense to me. it didn't really do a whole lot for me either. I've seen the, you know, she's telling the truth but they think she's crazy thing one too many times for it to be like really compelling for me. So I mean, it's nice to see that this happened between Alice and her father, and I'm sure it's setting something up for next week, but you know, it wasn't as effective as it should have been for me either.
You know what was actually really interesting to me was that when she was stuck in the trees and she couldn't really remember who she was and she wanted so badly to stay there because she was happy, that hit me a lot harder than her backstory and seeing her father, you know, not really caring about her maybe as much as he should have and sort of giving her up for his new family. But when she was in that forest, and you could tell how much she was fighting against, you know, letting go of that happiness, because even though it wasn't really real, it was the first time in so long that she's been that happy. And I thought that kind of did more justice to her backstory and her personality and her journey as a person than the actual backstory did.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's interesting how they did do it. I mean, you know, kind of in that foresty, you know, sort of drug state. I mean, there are a couple of people that are all looking to forget in a sense or to be peaceful. Like the Knave obviously has his heart that is not where you think it is. So he doesn't feel. I mean, a lot of this is about feeling and dealing with your feelings and emotions and the good and the bad. And as you said, Alice is there in the sort of tree foresty, you know, place where she just wants to be in her little happy place and not feel the pain. Even what I thought was interesting too is that the doctor of the insane asylum was just before Jafar came in. Did you notice that he was doing drops of laudanum into a shot glass and taking
what is
laudanum?
That?
Laudanum is it's actually a drug that was used fairly frequently in the Victorian times. It's highly, highly addicting. It's basically an opiate is what it is. I mean, we've now like refined our drugs a little bit more in the 21st century, but it was this very highly addictive drug that they used as a painkiller, and it's made basically from opium. And, You know, it's very, very addicting. It basically just numbs you. It you know, it can knock you out if you want, but it really ends, you end up feeling numb. So I thought that was kind of interesting that everybody in the episode, or not everybody, but a good portion of the people in the episode are either trying to make themselves numb to pain or denying their pain. I mean, it's definitely an interesting theme. I mean, I'm just wondering if we're eventually going to get, what is the doctor's pain that he's numbing himself to? I don't know. It was kind of strange. I mean, probably you could say, as when Alice was there as a patient, I mean, they used to frequently drug patients in insane asylums. I mean, he maybe at one point had even given Alice laudanum, who knows? That would not be uncharacteristic for the insane asylum, which, by the way, is bedlam. If anybody's ever heard of the phrase, oh, it was absolute bedlam, it's the shortening of the Bethlehem insane asylum in London. And when you say Bethlehem, like, really quickly over and over again, it comes out as bedlam. So bedlam was the insane asylum, and the expression "it was absolute bedlam" means that it was just, everything was crazy, it was a disaster, it was nuts. So useless trivia for everybody right there.
That's interesting. I think the doctor is probably taking the laudanum because he saw the rabbit, because he did say, you know, put it away, I was trying to forget about that. And so I think, like, he was probably dosing himself just to try to forget what he saw when Alice escaped.
Point. Although it makes you wonder if he was taking the laudanum before that, or if it's,
yeah,
he's wondering if he's hallucinating because of the laudanum. Who knows? Backtracking a minute, we were talking about Alice and her journey and her return with the family. I had a real problem. Like, her dad just didn't seem, I mean, it was like, oh, Alice, I mean, I just thought he would be more emotional. Did you think the dad was, like, emotional enough? I mean, even if he was conflicted because he had a wife and a new child, did you guys just feel the dad wasn't emotional enough about her returning?
Yeah, no, as far as Alice's father goes, I thought he was just kind of lacking emotion the entire episode. Like, he seemed so removed from it. I would think if your child returned to you after many years away, it wouldn't matter what she was talking about. You'd just be glad to have her back.
We don't have an exact timeline, do we? I mean, we know that Alice visited Wonderland the first time as a very little girl, because we see that, you know, she's maybe 6 or 7 the first time she goes there. And obviously it's a ongoing kind of thing. But we don't have a timeline, do we, of, like, how old Alice is now versus the last time she disappeared. So we don't really know the length of time, right, that she's gone missing?
Right. I would assume, I'm pretty sure he said years. And I mean, if that little girl is, like, I don't know, how old do you think she is?
Oh, good point. She's probably about 6 or 7.
Right. So it's had to have been about that long.
Yeah, that, to me, that makes it even more tragic, because if you think, I mean, I don't know, what is Alice, maybe 20 years old? I mean, because I just don't think she's that much more than 20, or they're trying to play her more than that. You know, 20 minus 7 would be 13, you know, to go missing, you know, at like 13, or even if they're trying to play her as 18 or 19. I mean, yeah, I think it's a hard swallow to think about your child being gone and returned. And I don't know, I'm having a really hard time with it. Plus, like, the evil stepmother there, who's,
yeah,
you know, she's a piece of work too. I mean, the thought of, you know, oh, my, you know, stepdaughter who I thought was gone for good is back, and now I'm going to try to marry her off. I'm surprised they were even going to try to marry her off at all. I mean, at that point, you think they would just want to ship her out and get rid of her entirely. But
yeah, like, that lady is, like, the definition of cold. Not necessarily evil or mean or terrible. She's just cold. Like, she doesn't seem to give a what. She doesn't care at all about what Alice is going through. It's just, she's not doing it on my timeline, and that's just not acceptable. And I was like, oh my lord, like, you're a little intense, lady, chill out. Like,
yeah, no, yeah. I mean, honestly, she makes Lady Grantham from Downton Abbey look downright warm and fuzzy, you know? I mean, seriously. I mean, it is all very, like, you know, oh, what will the neighbors think, and manners and expectations and all that, but still, yeah, very, very cold. And
see,
then
I was trying really hard during this episode to sort of see it from their point of view because I wanted to have a connection with the father and I wanted to see him emotional, and you're right, he wasn't. And I think like you can sort of excuse that away because he probably thought she was dead and he tried so hard to get over it and he was in so much pain over that and over his wife and everything, and he finally has a new family where he can sort of start over. And I can understand why he's clinging to that so much, although it doesn't really excuse you, like, basically kicking your first child out of your house when she's obviously in a lot of pain. Like, whether he believes it's real or not, the pain is real and her sadness is real. And I don't understand how anybody could just be like, well, these are your choices, because they're not very good choices. And yeah, the stepmother was... You're right, Kristen. She wasn't evil, but she was just cold. And it's really sad to see that. Although in fairy tales and stuff, the stepmothers are always like that. So I wasn't really expecting anything else, I guess.
Speaking of choices and social obligations. So apparently they were going to fix her up with Mr. Darcy, who, in case people aren't aware, Mr. Darcy would be the Jane Austen classic hero from Pride and Prejudice. I had, like, caps locks of rage going on in my head when it was Mr. Darcy. I was like, no! I mean, I was just, I was not happy. How were you guys about the Mr. Darcy thing?
I just kept sitting there going, no. No, it's a coincidence. It has to be. It can't be what they're trying to do. That's not... No, no. Like, I'm just sitting in my head, like, just kind of convincing it myself that, no, this isn't happening. I don't know what they... How that would even work into this. Like, it's not... Pride and Prejudice is not a fairy tale, and it's very... it hurts me to think that they would try and put that into this world. Like, it just gets me. I don't know.
Okay, so this is confession time, because I've never read Pride and Prejudice. I knew Mr. Darcy was, like, a literary character, and that's about it. So it didn't cause me any pain, although it was really intriguing to see them sort of call up this story. And I would love this to sort of be like a crossover type thing, because even though Alice in Wonderland is a fairy tale story, you know, she goes to another world and that's where the fairy tale takes place. But back home, it's Victorian England, and that's very much set in reality. And so I think it makes a lot of sense for a character like Mr. Darcy to exist in that world. So I think it would be kind of cool to see them pull more literary characters or other characters into this story like they do with Once Upon a Time.
First of all, we need to absolutely have you watch the BBC version with Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy, because I'm not sure we could be friends unless you do that.
Oh, no.
so we need to make you watch that movie. Like, it's a requirement, I think, to be on Hypable to have watched that movie. But the second part, here's the other problem I had with it. Aside from, you know, Kristen, I'm sort of with you going, dear God, Disney is not allowed to touch Jane Austen. Get away from Jane Austen. The other problem I'm having with it is Mr. Darcy, that character was written in Regency England, which is the early 1800s. Alice in Wonderland is set in the Victorian era in the late 1800s. Mr. Darcy would be freaking 75 years old with no teeth and a hunchback at this point. I'm like, I just wanted to scream at the writers going, you know, shoddy research, guys. Even if you're going to go down that path, concretely setting Alice in the period of the Victorians, to then take a character out of the Regency and just chuck him in doesn't make any kind of sense. I mean, it would be like, you know, it would be like in the United States setting something in, say, like the 1800s in New York City and then have Martha Washington come in. I mean, it's, you know, yeah, they're historic characters, but they're like 200 years apart. Like, that's sort of the problem with it too. So
could it be his grandson?
I suppose suppose. They did not use his first name. We didn't hear him say Fitzwilliam, so we don't know it. And they're probably going to drop this plot point anyway, so maybe it is the great, great grandson of Lizzie and Darcy, and I don't know. I'm just going to be miserable and cranky about it, I suppose. Maybe it's, I'll forgive them. I will forgive them if it's a grandson, but I reserve my right to be miserable and cranky about it nonetheless. So anyway, I suppose we should move on because our listeners probably don't want to hear me being moody anymore. So why don't we flip back to Wonderland itself and talk about where Alice ends up in this, you know, the creepy forest and finds the guy with the saber, and she ends up, you know, kind of inhaling the magic dust and going to Alice's happy place.
I think I was, especially at first, trying to figure out what exactly was going on. I'm not really well versed in Wonderland and the stories about Wonderland. Like, I know the major Alice story. I know most of the major players, but as far as like the finer points of the story, I'm not very good with them. So I was like racking my brain trying to come up with, you know, what exactly is going on here? Who is this guy? How is she going to get out of this? Like, you know, trying to figure it out and put it together myself. I liked it. Like, it was a really, definitely more intriguing story for me than the backstory for her this episode. And I was really excited to, you know, get the Knave and Alice back together. So as soon as he showed up, I was really excited for the rest of it. So, other than that, it wasn't exactly like a hugely thrilling tale of, you know, Alice and Will defeating like the forest. Like, I mean, I don't know, there wasn't like a hugely thrilling aspect to it, but I did like what themes and stuff were touched on in there.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I was expecting her to meet someone or something in the Black Forest, and nothing happened. She basically walked through the Black Forest and then kind of popped out into the Borrowgroves, and you know, yeah, she had to face challenges there, but I feel like they really could have creeped us out and given us a little bit more in the Black Forest. So I was a little disappointed about that. I think once she got to the Borrowgroves, like, that was really cool. And that's when I really started getting into the episode, because it shows you how much she desires to be happy and to have a home and a place where she belongs. And even though, I mean, what was going on was obviously keeping her from those things, you know, all she wanted was to be happy like that. And it was really kind of tragic to see her sort of weak and vulnerable, because the Alice that we know, the Alice that beat up those two thugs in the forest, I mean, she's a really kick-ass character. And so it was hard for me to see her like that.
Also, just in case people are wondering where the Borrowgroves name comes from, it's from the poem Jabberwocky that is part of the Alice in Wonderland mythology. And there's been other like Jabberwocky references different creatures and things throughout, but that's where the Borrowgroves name comes from, in case anybody was wondering. I guess a little anticlimactic. I mean, the fact that she took the necklace off too, like, I wanted there to be, I don't know, something bigger or more dramatic about the fact that the necklace came off, or like, I don't know. It was just like Will comes in and he's like, oh, and your necklace is off. Like, you're not sure like how long it's been off, or I just felt like if the necklace was off, it would have, I don't know, wouldn't like psychic messages or something go out to like the Red Queen and Jafar, and they knew that what would happened. And I don't know. I felt like there wasn't anything big enough for the fact that the necklace was off her body. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, they've made a huge deal out of this necklace and its attachment to Cyrus and like what exactly it means. Even I'm not entirely sure, but it seemed, yeah, anticlimactic that she takes it off. It sits on the ground or on her saber for a while and nothing happens. Like, that, I agree with you. That is definitely, it's missing something.
I think that's sort of our overall theme this time, is that this episode had a lot of potential and it just didn't live to the potential. I know for me, One of my favorite moments in the episode was when the Knave finally arrives and he shows up. And I felt like that's when the action picked up. Did you guys have the same feeling?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
You know, I was just thinking about this the other day about why am I more attached to Once Upon a Time versus Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. And granted, you know, obviously we're three seasons in on Once Upon a Time and you've had more of an opportunity to make a connection. But I feel like I don't have as much of a connection to a lot of the characters in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland as instantaneously as I had connections to the initial characters in the regular Once Upon a Time. Like, I was instantaneously caught up in the story of Henry, or I really wanted to know how Emma's story was going to work out. There were so many people that you really cared about. I guess I'm having a hard time caring about a lot of these characters. What are you guys on that same level?
Yes and no. I know I definitely have an attachment to Will. I really like him. I really like Cyrus too. I wish we got more of him and knew more about him, because I think he's really interesting, especially this quality of his that he doesn't seem to ever give up. Like, he has this, you know, ability to believe that it's all going to work out and he's going to, you know, he's going to get back to where he's going to figure it out. And he never seems to really deviate from that. I think that's really intriguing and cool, and I'd love to see more of it. But other than that, I mean, I care about Alice, but I'm not hugely attached to her where if something bad happens to her, I'm like dreading it yet. Maybe that's to come, because I know, you know, we're not halfway through this season yet. So, I mean, there still is some time for me to attach to her. But other than that, I'm with you. Like, these characters haven't really found their place for me, like their place in my heart yet.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem there is that, for me at least, Alice and Cyrus are too perfect. They're sort of two-dimensional. They don't have a whole lot of depth yet. And, I mean, I do like Alice because I think she's a strong female character, and I like seeing her take charge, and I like seeing her sort of not giving up and being as determined and powerful as she is. But Cyrus, to me, is sort of like blah. Like, he's, you know, he's interesting, I guess, because he's a genie and he fell in love with Alice, and that's cute and sweet and everything. But what else is there about him? Like, what's the meat of his story? We haven't gotten there yet. And whereas with the Knave, you know, he's sort of this bad guy who's trying to be a good guy, and that's so much more dynamic and interesting. And I even kind of like the Red Queen more than I like Cyrus, because we know where she came from. We knew that she was a good person, and all she really wanted was to not be, you know, poor and living in the forest off of what they could scavenge. She just wanted to be comfortable, and she thought that would bring her happiness. And even though she was wrong, you can understand where she came from. And I don't know if we just need more backstory for the other characters, or if they've kind of set them up to be these perfect people. And we all know that flawed characters are always the most interesting ones. So who knows what direction they're going in, but I hope that we do get kind of more meat for Alice and Cyrus in particular.
Yeah, I think I definitely feel like that too. I feel like we're told Alice loves Cyrus more than seeing why. And
right.
I think that's what really the problem is, because you don't understand why she's going to these ends. Like, why is he this great guy? I mean, granted, we see a bit when she falls into his genie bottle and everything there, but yeah, we don't have that backstory. Meanwhile, we've gotten, you know, the Knave backstory episode with Robin Hood. We've gotten the Jafar backstory with the creepy sorceress thing. That was just, you know, bad. But yeah, we don't really have that for Cyrus, so I think it certainly does affect our feelings for him. It's tough, and I agree with you, Kristen. I'm really much more invested in the Knave and how will his story work out, because even though we do know a bit about Anastasia, I'm just having a tremendous time even trying to see a little bit in her point of view. Like, when we're talking about regular Once Upon a Time, even as bad as Regina or Gold would get, like, there were, like, you really could see their humanity. You really could see how they could be redeemable. Like they still had a good side. Like Regina, despite it all, loved Henry. And Mr. Gold, once he met Belle, you could see that he had like legitimate feelings for something, even when he was evil, versus the Red Queen. I mean, she does sort of try to spare Will's life, but you don't see, I don't know, you don't see more of anything from her regarding, like, feeling for him or wanting to save him, or, I don't know, I just, I'm sort of like, I don't know if I'm going to be really annoyed if at the end the two of them get together. I'm going to be like, run far away, leave Anastasia in the dust, do not hook up with her, because I just feel like she's so shallow. Maybe that's what bothers me. I just feel like Anastasia is the most shallow human being on earth, and she constantly takes the choice that's, I don't know, that's to deal with like frivolous comfort or beauty or whatever, and just doesn't regard people's feelings. I don't know, maybe that's it.
Yeah, see, it's really interesting to me because she's sort of like the opposite of Regina and Rumple, because Regina's true love was taken away from her, and that's sort of why she went down the dark path. And then, of course, Mila left Rumple, and he started going down the dark path after that. So love was taken away from them, and they became these evil things. And in the end, love is, you know, really starting to save them with Henry and, you know, of course, with Belle for Rumple and his son, too. Whereas Anastasia chose to get rid of her love to become the queen. And so you're right. I'm not really sure that's redeemable unless she realizes that, you know, love is more important than power, but she is really shallow. And she made that choice. The love wasn't taken away from her. So I'm not sure she's really going to go back on that.
We know it's a one season series and everything, but I feel like they need for things to happen to make us as viewers care and be more conflicted about a lot of these characters, because right now I'm sort of sticking in it for the Knave and to a degree Alice, but after that I just don't care about these people enough other than to want to see them dead. Like I want to see Jafar die a lonely and painful death. I mean, yes. I'm not sure if that's incredibly healthy, but possibly for Anastasia, I don't know that she just needs a lonely and painful death, but I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe she gets to be ugly, like a hunchback and bad teeth and I don't know, some rags or I don't know. I'm having a hard time feeling the love. I don't know. Maybe I'm being mean and shallow myself. I don't know.
No, I don't think so, because I think, you know, Jafar at least to me seems like he isn't redeemable. We've gotten his backstory and it's not made us like him anymore. It actually has made me like him even less because we saw how manipulative he was so early on, and he played that sorceress like big time. Whereas Anastasia, like you kind of get more of that human aspect to her. And so Jafar, I could definitely see, you know, yes, I want him to die a horrible and painful death. But Anastasia, I really do want to see her happy. And I think that really is only going to come if she gives up her power as queen, or maybe she's going to end up sacrificing herself or something like that. I don't necessarily think her and the Knave are going to get back together because I don't know. I feel like there's just too much like bad blood between them for that to actually happen.
I can't exactly say that I like the Red Queen or that I find her like at all redeemable, because there's just something about turning away the boy that you chose over your family. You chose him as your, you know, your true love, and you ran away. And then at the first sign of trouble, she dumps him and picks the guy with all the money and wants to be, you know, happy and live in a palace and whatnot. So I don't know if it's that I just can't relate to that that makes it so hard for me to like her or to, you know, to wonder what she could do to kind of win me back. But ultimately, I just think that Will hopefully will find some other way to be happy, and that her ultimate like punishment will be that Will is happy without her. At this point, I feel like that's the only way for that story to wrap up and for Will to kind of, because he was hurt and she chose to do it. And, you know, nothing really terrible happened to her because of it. So I'm hoping that somehow she kind of gets her comeuppance and Will gets a chance to actually be happy.
Yeah, see, that's kind of why I hope that she sacrifices herself for him or for the little group or something, because I feel like, you know, it'll redeem her, but also it'll kind of be like the only way I think that the Knave really forgives her, because words can only go so far. And I feel like if she was to betray Jafar or something, or even, you know, be willing to risk her life for them, that's really going to be the only way that he can see what little good is still inside her. Because I truly believe that there is something still inside her. I mean, we saw that she clearly cares about Will still. And so I think that's what I'm holding on to. Like, I get that she is really shallow and she's really greedy and she's really vain, but I feel like there's something inside of her that, you know, if she can just keep going in the right direction, hopefully that side is going to start winning soon.
Yeah, I think it's just time. It's just time for development, and hopefully maybe I'll come around and I'll fall in love with these people. What do you think about potential? Because I mentioned this briefly before. We know that the Knave does end up in Storybrooke. Like, we know that without question. So do you guys want to see him back in Storybrooke when this is all over on some level? And if so, who do you want him there with?
Yes, I want him there. I'm not picky as to who he's with. I just want the character, like, still around. And I think he would have really, really great interactions with Emma. Like, I can just see them. Yep. Like, oh, it would be so great. So, so great. But I could also, if for some reason Megan Ori came back, him and Red would be really fun. Ooh. Too. I'm trying to, like, rack my brain for who could possibly.
There's a crack ship, boy. Red, yeah. Red and the Knave. Bring on the crack ship.
That would just be fun. I don't know.
Oh, he's got a thing for girls with Red. I mean, come on, the Red Queen.
There you go, right? Do you think any of the other characters have crossover potential that we're going to want to see them in Storybrooke?
I think maybe Alice. And I think if you're going to do Alice, you have to sort of bring Cyrus along. I think she would be interesting because she already knew about the real world, but she knows about Victorian England. And so it would be kind of cool to have her in the modern world. Any of the other ones, I think there's only so much room on Once Upon a Time. And if you throw in somebody like the Red Queen, she's just going to be vying for space against Regina and Rumpel. And people are going to like Regina and Rumpel more. So I don't really see them like throwing her in the mix. But I definitely agree. I want to see the Knave. I think he would do really great with Emma. That would be awesome. But I think like he would do really great against Regina, and not in like, you know, I'm not shipping them or anything, but just like how sassy he is, I can just see him just really kind of giving her a run for her money, and it would be hilarious.
The only thing I can think of for the Red Queen is if she showed up in Storybrooke thinking that she was gonna like take over this world and just get slapped down over and over again, like, yeah. She keeps trying things, and Regina and Rumpel just like bat her away, like, get out of my way, like,
it,
you're
it
annoying.
Is Regina would be like, fireball.
Yeah.
fireball. It's sort of like if you've ever seen the movie The Cutting Edge, and there's that line, toe pick. To me, it's like fireball. I mean, it's just so, like, to me, the Red Queen is just such, like, a wannabe user of magic. Like, she has a level of it, but I feel like, if without question, if you had to say, like, what degree of magic people have, like, she's amateur. You know, I feel like Regina and Rumpel's skill set is so much higher than hers is. But it's interesting. I'm curious what would happen if you put Regina and Rumpel into the same world with the magic of the genies of Cyrus and the magic that Jafar has obtained. I'm curious whose magic is stronger or if it's just different magic. I'm really curious, you know, would those magics work together in the same world or would that create more problems?
Yeah, that is interesting. I feel like there's certain rules to each kind of magic. Like, obviously, the genie has his restrictions, and in a lot of ways, the other ones do too. And to see them sort of having to, I don't know, maybe exploit those weaknesses against each other would be kind of interesting. But it would also sort of be cool to see them get together and team up. And, you know, that would sort of be an unstoppable force.
I'm curious, like part of me is going, don't cross the streams. I don't know. Sometimes those crossover things work really well. And other times it's like, oh no, no, please go back to your own worlds. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes in the end. Before we talk about Jafar going to like just sort of wrapping it up with Jafar with Alice's father, is there anything else anybody wants to bring up?
Did we talk about where Will may have stashed his heart?
Oh, no, that's a good thing we should probably get into. Where do you go? I know I'm completely clueless. I wasn't surprised that he doesn't have his heart with them. That did not particularly surprise me because I do feel like they've kind of alluded to that at different points, but I haven't got a clue where he's keeping it. What do you guys think?
I was sort of surprised that he doesn't have it with him. I guess, like, it does sort of make sense. I mean, it was obviously a very good reason why he didn't stick it back in his chest. But I actually really love that they went down this path because it sort of shows you that even though he doesn't have his heart inside of him, he's helping Alice and he genuinely cares about her. And so that's kind of messes with your brain a little bit because they're supposed to literally be heartless and he's not. I mean, we saw how much Cora changed when she had her heart out and then it got put back in. So I don't know. That's sort of cool. And I hope they explore more of like how he feels and if it is all an act or if it is genuine that he cares about Alice. But in terms of where he could have hidden the heart, I'm thinking Storybrooke because that would sort of be like the safest place. It's far away. I don't think anybody in Storybrooke really knows who he is. It's far away from, you know, Wonderland and the people who maybe would want to get to his heart. And he could probably store it somewhere safe there.
It's in the bread box at Granny's Diner.
Gross.
I love the idea of him storing it in Storybrooke. It makes total sense. I don't think he would leave it anywhere in Wonderland because he clearly had no desire to return to Wonderland. And I don't think he would leave it there unprotected with, you know, the for people to be able to control him and use him. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. The one thing about this story is when someone has their heart removed and we're supposed to think they're heartless and all of that, I always wonder if the actor knows that that is something that's going on when they first start the character. Because I feel like in this instance, I feel like maybe he did know. And they did tell him that he didn't have his heart because he's done such a great job of wanting to help Alice and wanting to kind of be good and do the right thing in most situations here, but without being overly emotional and overly interested in what's going on. And when he saw Anastasia, I think we all wanted there to be this, you know, big dramatic tension between them, and it didn't seem to be there. And I kind of wondered why, and now it makes so much more sense. So I'm really intrigued to see what happens with Will and his heart and whether he chooses to put it back or where it is and all of that. I find that really cool.
Yeah, I think I like the Storybrooke idea. I think it's a cool idea. I'm definitely for that. And it's a great way of bringing him back, you know, to Storybrooke. So I do like that as an option. I think I could be a fan of that idea. That could work. Okay, why don't we get into talking about Jafar and sort of the end that he's gone and he's getting Alice's father back. So Jafar obviously goes back to England and his goal is to get Alice's father and clearly bring him back. What's the end game of that? Like, do you think it's to get her to give up a wish? Is that what it is?
I'd imagine.
Yeah, that is sort of his end game.
Yeah, like he's going to put him into some sort of peril that Alice has to use a wish to save him because the only way she'll use wishes is to help others. She doesn't seem to care about, you know, herself. Like, she'll withstand whatever he can throw at her. But if he's trying to hurt somebody else, she won't stand for it.
It'll be interesting to see if it works, because as we said before, our level of caring about Alice's father is not nearly as high as you might think. So this could be an interesting, either it's going to work or it's not going to work.
Although, you know, I do kind of have high hopes for this, because once he realizes that Wonderland is real, it's going to be really interesting to see how much he changes and, you know, if he apologizes to Alice and that sort of thing. And maybe that'll make us care about him some more.
That would be cool if he had like an epiphany all of a sudden. Would be really cool. I'm not sure, but that would be pretty cool. So, folks, that's about it for this week's discussion of Once Upon a Time and Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. The show is on a little bit of a hiatus now due to the Thanksgiving holidays here in the United States. So we will be back again in December once each of the shows air. I think probably what we'll do, because we're out of sync a little bit here, is we will probably have our next episode will be just a Once Upon a Time episode, and then the episode that follows that will be a Wonderland combined with the regular Once Upon a Time episode, just because of how schedules work out and everything. But so don't worry, we're going to take a little break for Thanksgiving, but we will in fact be back. So until the next time, I'm Laura.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Bye.